I believe Ben Nielsen is going to introduce this.
We've now been joined
by Commissioner Andrew Clark.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm not going to give too much of an introduction except to say that the culinary corridor is a concept that you heard about from our conversation last fall during the Block 216 design review. Just to remind you where Block 216 is, it's along 9th Avenue between Alder and Washington Street, and this site is currently occupied by food carts, which used to look like this, and eventually will not as construction gets underway on this block. So kind of a fortuitous happening occurred during this process. Three people brought an idea to City Council saying you should consider allowing food carts to move into the streets, specifically along the Green Loop, along 9th and Park Avenues. And that also would gel well with what ended up happening along 9th Avenue at Block 216. If you remember here, there was a retail food hall concept with multiple direct connections to the street, as well as six walk-up food service windows. So I just wanted to kind of prime that history for you as we get into the actual discussion about the culinary corridor today. It is a process that has started. I think we've been working in a work group since about January. I'm on that work group as well, bringing my knowledge of the Green Loop and Block 216 and what the design commissions had to say about all these things to the discussion. So I think I'm going to stop talking and turn it over to my colleagues from PBOT and BPS.
Okay, thank you, Ben. My name is Matt Burko. I'm with the Development Permitting and Transit Group at the Portland Bureau of Transportation.
There you go.
Better? Okay, so my name is Matt Burko. I am with the Development Permitting and Transit Group at the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And we are going to give you an update on exploring the concept of a culinary corridor. We're not presenting any, we don't have a concept to present today. This is kind of a briefing. Ben described the presentation by community members to council, kind of flagging the issue that a lot of the downtown food carts and trucks are on parking lots, and those parking lots are redeveloping. And the Block 216 in particular, which is one of the largest downtown, kind of prompted this idea of food carts or food pods in the public right of way. So the mayor's office asked us to explore the concept. What would be the issues, concerns, opportunities, logistical items with accommodating mobile food vending units in the right of way. So we've already done the introductions. I'm going to turn this over to Rich for a moment, but I'll kind of give a little more detail on the context and sort of what we've been doing. Then I'll share, we did assemble a multi-agency, multi-bureau work group to help, daylight the issues that would need to be addressed. So we'll share those considerations. The community members did identify a particular, 9th and Park kind of as a potential concept. And we also identified other potential locations in the downtown that to explore. So we have some preliminary concepts that we just would like to get your feedback on. And so we've left hopefully a good amount of time for discussion. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rich.
Good afternoon, Design Commission. My name is Rich Eisenhower with Portland Bureau of Transportation. I'm the program manager of our Portland in the Streets program. Back in, I don't know how many were here, in December of 2017, I had the opportunity to present to you our livable street strategy that was adopted in October of 2017. It was PWAT's newest placemaking initiative that really reinforces the idea that streets are public places for all people and all of it. Ages and abilities to enjoy, that PBOT prioritizes people by encouraging the use of the public right-of-way for community gathering, placemaking, and programming. The adoption of the livable street strategy was the foundation for developing the permits and programs that are under the Portland the Streets program. The Portland Streets program works to promote community placemaking through temporary and permanent uses of the public right-of-way. Portland the Street encourages individuals and businesses to get creative and reimagine their streets, parking spaces, plazas, alleys, as places to enjoy and engage the community. Through Portland Streets programs, Portland can celebrate, get active, create community identity, and improve businesses by activating public streets. Today, I wanted to share our annual report of the Portland Streets program that each of you have. So this kind of highlights all the work we've done since we launched the program last year in about March of 2018, and also some ideas of other programs we're working on as we are in now in 2019. Just, you know, the presentation you'll see today about the culinary corridor, you know, is directly in line with the Portland Streets, our objectives, our mission, our goals, and our policies. So just wanted to kind of give that background before we get into the culinary corridor presentation.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Rich. Did you have a question?
Well, I was curious, how many blocks do you foresee the culinary corridor encompassing?
That's a great question. I think at this point, the community members had suggested the idea of a pilot. They had suggested maybe piloting a single block. So again, we're not at the place of making a specific proposal. I mean, but in the exploring, what would the implications be?
What block is that?
They don't have to find a block.
I'll show a slide. They did identify 9th Avenue from O'Brien Square to Director Park, with the idea that potentially one block in there could be a pilot. So that was the proposal from the community members. So, okay, so again, I have maybe the same image or a similar image of block 216. We kicked off this process. We assembled a work group, various bureaus, Multnomah County Department of Health, Prosper Portland, and we invited Randy Gregg, who was one of the community members that presented to council, to give the same presentation to us, to raise the kind of share the thinking with us for us to consider. And one of the points that Randy made was that food carts are a source of, are often run by recent immigrants. And so kind of the affordability of, if we were to accommodate food carts in the public right away, that affordability would still be a core value, lest we kind of take, if we overregulate it and put it out of reach, that would sort of defeat some of the purpose of what they were trying to maintain. Also made the point that food carts are not only very popular with residents, but also with tourists. Travel Portland is supportive of, maintaining food carts downtown. And there are apparently publications in Japan highlighting, the food cart scene in Portland. So the location was also a consideration, then not only for like downtown people eating lunch and meals, but also tourism and affordability. So they kind of laid out some core values. And we learned that Portland has been ranked the number one most friendly city for food carts by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation, which did a report where they kind of looked at the amount of regulations and permits and the ease of operating a food cart, and Portland ranked number one. Again, Ben described that, food carts are often located on parking lots. They're redeveloping the block 216 was the impetus for this work. And, the way the mayor's office asked us to explore the concepts for a potential affordable commercial program focused on women and people of color. So that's what we're exploring. Here's a rendering from the community members' presentation of what a, potential culinary corridor could look like. So again, you see sort of replacing parking spaces with food carts. And again, as you were asking, this is the extent that they proposed to be considered. And so through our work group, we have been looking at, sort of logistically what the issues are. And at this location, we also identified two other locations as potentially worth exploring. And one of them we call Ankeny Alley West. So this is in the vicinity of Ankeny Square, right near Burnside. And then what we're calling Ankeny Alley East, which would be on Ankeny from 3rd to 5th, which kind of dead ends into the Big Pink on one end and Voodoo Donuts on the other end. So kind of where we are, and I've sort of talked about this already. We had a listening session with Randy Gregg. We've had a few work group meetings. We had a design subgroup because we found that until we sort of sketched out some potential concepts, it was we kind of needed to get to a little bit of potential specificity to think about things. There's a lot that happens in those parking lots that you don't see. A lot of access to water and wastewater and trash and storage for things that don't fit in the cart, things that are going to be somewhat logistically challenging to do in the right-of-way. You know, so now that we have some theoretical designs, we're here to seek some input and advice from you, and we're planning to prepare a memo with recommendations to the mayor's office in spring. We did do a brief survey of the food carts on Block 216. I think at one time there were as many as 55. I think there's somewhere like 45 now. We reached out and were able to survey 2/3 of them approximately. Just a couple of key findings. We did find that there are at least a dozen different types of cuisine offered in Block 216. You know, most of the carts have a lease. Lease rates are somewhere in the ballpark, in the vicinity of $1,000 to $1,700. You know, there's a range of how long people have been there, but, you know, at least half of the carts have been there for 5 years or more. We also learned that Multnomah County Department of Health has been having their own work group to explore sort of the needs to maintain public health associated with mobile food vending units. And they've identified these six pod operational ideals, things like proper setbacks, the idea being if the carts are too close together, one fire can easily spread to all the others. So access to fresh water, pest control, wastewater removal, things like that. So they're kind of identifying the what might come. They may, what they're trying to identify, how to maintain public health, and some might be regulatory and some may not be regulatory. So they're sort of still in their process, but we anticipate some level of countywide regulations coming down, you know, in the next year or so. So whatever would happen in the public right away would have to be compliant. So that was good to be aware of. So before I turn it over to Mark to talk about the designs, some of the key considerations, there's a lot that we still don't know. We see some opportunities, but the things that really still need to be explored further is, again, affordability and equity of opportunity is a core principle in how to maintain that. Mm-hmm. Program management, it's unlikely that the city would get into the business of managing food carts. It would be more likely to permit and, you know, perhaps have an RFP where an entity would manage the food carts. So again, thinking about how many food carts or trucks do you need for that to be a viable thing? If there's just two on one street, who's, you know, it might be harder to find an entity willing to manage that. So again, the parking lots can have a large number of carts in a smaller space, and the public right of way has fewer opportunities for that. Some of the I showed you the three different locations. Some of them are adjacent to parks, or some of them include parks, and so parks are one that, you know, potentially could be. Some parks could be considered for food carts, but there's a lot of Ankeny Square is one that seemed the most likely of the parks in this vicinity, but it needs infrastructure upgrades to actually be potentially viable. There would need to be additional funding for operations and maintenance. So there's a lot of things that would still need to be worked out there. You know, food carts would be taking parking spaces, and potentially some of these streets could be considered for closing to traffic. So there's circulation and parking impacts to still be considered. I think the thinking is that for a pilot to be successful, you know, hard connections to sewer and water would be a more aesthetically pleasing and kind of better for public health. So how to fund those, put those in. And then, you know, we've had interactions with bureau stakeholders and other agency stakeholders to help us daylight the issues, but we have not reached out to the stakeholders, you know, the adjacent property owners in these theoretical locations. So all that work is still yet to be done. So we're kind of coming to you still at a very early stage for your input. So with that, Mark, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Hello, Commissioners. Mark Raggett with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I've been working with the PBOT team and the city team to kind of look at these three areas. I realize I have a laser pointer, but you're all looking at a screen, your own screen. So I may or may not use the laser pointer here, but now it doesn't seem to be even registering on the screen. So I'm going to try and wave my arms around and tell you to look at things on your own screens or that screen if you want to, and I'll see if I can get a pointer to work. Is this going to work better? Not appearing on, you guys see that? There it is. Yeah. There's the pointer. Okay. I didn't mean to turn everyone away from their screens also. If you prefer to look at your screen, feel free to look at it. Like Matt and Rich said, just some caveats. We're looking at three areas. Block 216 is right here. We looked at 9th Avenue. The sort of initial direction in the concept from the Randy Gregg sort of group was to look at Southwest 9th Avenue and the Green Loop alignment first. In looking at sort of this part of downtown, we identified sort of an area around Ankeny Square, Ankeny, which we're calling Ankeny Alley West, which had, if some people recall, did have some food carts in the park not too long ago. Pretty neat, and activating sort of a key little spot in sort of our park block chain, which is a neat, a very neat little urban place. And a third sort of location, which is Ankeny Alley East, which is kind of an extension. This Voodoo Donuts is right at that red dot right there, which sort of we have sort of this Ankeny corridor, this vision of Ankeny. These two blocks could be an extension of sort of that experience that we have sort of right in here just to the west of these two blocks. So we do three areas. A couple caveats are that these are very conceptual, like Matt said. These are very early. We're beginning to do our homework. They are, the graphics you'll see are sort of physical graphics in plan view. So this commission, especially that's interested in physical space and the experience of an urban city, you can begin to get a sense of where things might go, where they might be located. They are close to scale, but not to scale. So you'll see the right number of parking spaces, the right amount of loading zones, those kinds of things, where we might have food carts, where we might have food trucks. Those things can change. But I just want to give you, these are early, not everything. They don't have all the notes. They don't have all the information just yet. So that's coming. Before we even get into locations, we did do some work. Most of the streets we're looking at are pretty narrow, as I think you guys are aware. So the Southwest 9th Avenue, for example, is a 50-foot right-of-way. That's about 10 feet narrower than our typical 60-foot, which is already pretty narrow. So as we go through Block 216 and sort of down towards Director Park, we have a limited amount of right-of-way, and especially between the curbs, to play with. So we started thinking about food carts versus food trucks. These are some early diagrams showing some different layouts. Most notably, the food carts are usually bigger than a food truck. A food truck could be a one-to-one exchange for a parking place, if I'm sort of just trying to use an analogy. A food truck is just a bigger parked car in an on-street parking space, to sort of just plant a seed in your head about that idea. A food cart is something else, something you would be staying longer, frankly, and the dimensions typically of food carts are bigger. So if we were to sort of, for example, propose some food carts in Southwest 9th Avenue, the likelihood is we would have to remove a lot of the on-street parking, a la the streetscape proposed for Block 216, which had four parking spaces and a chicane. And those four parking spaces on Block 216 could accommodate food carts in the future because the road wiggles and there's no other on-street parking there. Food trucks, easier to accommodate on-street parking and perhaps sort of work with the existing environment. So we're just bear some of these ideas in mind. There's different arrangements you see to the right of maybe there are, we have the fronts opening onto the sidewalk, the backs on the right of way with a space for sort of a two-way wheeled bike facility potentially out here. Or there's some groupings, the whole street's closed. There's some groupings we could do with the food carts with the backs facing each other and the open ends where the customers sort of engage the cart or sort of group together that way. Different ideas, again, haven't sort of landed on a solution quite yet. First area is 9th Avenue. Here's a view. So 9th Avenue Galleria is on the right. The former Rich's Cigar Store here is on the left. So we're looking towards Director Park. That's the 10th and Yamhill Garage in the background. Julie, you're looking at me. You don't believe me?
You said former Rich's store.
Yeah, I don't
Rich's
think.
Leave.
That's what triggered you. Is it? I saw a sign. I think there's a sign in the window that says it's for lease, I think. Huh. I was just out here. I may be wrong. I may be looking at an old
picture. That is the most important takeaway of the day.
Well, so now I just said that on the record. I'm not sure now that that's entirely true. I thought I saw a sign that said the space was for lease. I know it's a loss. I agree. But so let's just say there's a sign that still says Rich's. Let's say it's Rich's still. How about that? Gallery on the right, 10th and Yamhill Garage here at Director Park just beyond. I think we're at Alder. This is Alder Street right here in the foreground. So today, if we look at plan view again, here's block, this big yellow blob that I haven't fully annotated is block 216. Here's sort of the streetscape. These are those proposed openings that Ben talked about from block 216. This is existing sort of layout. Again, not totally to scale because that looks really pinched if you're trying to drive through there. But that's about these are loading zones. This is the Galleria again. I'm sorry, 10th and Yamhill Garage, Galleria here. Loading zone today. These gray square rectangles are basically on-street parking spaces. There's a couple loading zones down here. This is Rich's right here, Galleria, and 10th and Yamhill Garage. Big loading zone here. So, and then I have a busy legend. I apologize. I haven't fixed all this yet. But if you go to the next one, Matt. So for an idea that we're looking at for 9th Avenue would be organize, sort of reorganizing the loading zones. If we start down at the bottom, moving the loading space that's down here closer to where they're going to have a necessary loading function for the 10th and Yamhill garage, which is sort of moved down to sort of this corner near Morrison, moving that loading zone down to that end of the block, and freeing up potentially three spaces of food trucks sort of at this end of the block close to Director Park. Doing a similar thing on the Galleria block, we're sort of potentially removing one loading zone and adding some on-street parking spaces back, and potentially repurposing three of the existing on-street parking spaces for food trucks. Another thing we're exploring is sort of a new permitting policy for the food trucks. So for example, a food truck might be able to, we might have permits that are, say, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on a given day, and food trucks could occupy those spaces for that lunch, a key kind of lunch hour time frame. And then those could be on-street parking spaces when the food trucks aren't in them. So say from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., that might be a food truck location, these rectangles in blue. And at other times of the day or evening, those could be typical on-street parking spaces. I want to say with the design a little bit, we're trying to be strategic about where we locate these relative to building facades and active sort of ground floor uses that we're also trying to get with these buildings. So the Galleria here has generally a blank wall and not a lot of openings. This is, I'm being optimistic with saying that's a building entrance. That's kind of a little more of what appears to be an emergency exit for the building. So this facade has no real retail. The main entrance of the Galleria is sort of on the other facades of the building. So this would be a pretty good facade where we wouldn't be impacting necessarily a lot of active building. Store frontages might be a good location for food trucks, or maybe one or two more. And on this end of the Galleria, there's some new restaurant and retail spaces going in with that redevelopment. And so we pushed the sort of food trucks again to the southern sort of end of that piece of 9th Avenue at that location. And Julia, so you might have a question or a
thought? I'm sorry, you can tell me to hold it until the end. Happy to do that. But if you don't tell me, I'm going to ask this question. The food truck idea, the fact that they are presumed to be mobile, how much of a challenge is that for those business owners? Is that a model that already exists in the world of food carts on Block 216 and other parking lots that are going to be redeveloped? Or is this kind of forcing people into a new model?
Do you guys want to, I would say, and then I'm going to turn it over to Rich and Matt. I think we don't have a lot of food trucks in the central city today, is my understanding. I think there are some, but they're very few. We typically have food carts.
When we did the survey of the Block 216, I knew a couple of them could do the mobile, but traditionally Portland has gone the food cart scene.
Yeah.
We're not really a mobile truck vending city,
right,
like you see in other bigger cities like Seattle and San Francisco and things.
And there's a couple of trailers, too, that get pulled in by a truck.
Yeah. Could drop for the day and then pick up.
I think that's a function of our cart program starting in parking lots mostly.
Yeah.
Because I've seen Minneapolis and Denver, trucks or food trucks are very common,
right,
in other cities.
And I think, again, because the charge was to look in the public right-of-way for locations for carts, again, from a transportation perspective, things with motors that can just pull up and park would be and kind of reuse a parking space sort of makes sense as an opportunity.
But now, there's an assumption underlying that about where the person who owns and operates that business has the resources available to park that food truck,
right,
elsewhere when they are not functioning in downtown Portland. And yeah, how viable is that really? If you can answer that question, great. If you can't.
No, I think you're correct. I think food and there, it's a food truck is more expensive than a food cart.
Yeah.
The food trucks offer, they're more self-contained in terms of their ability to provide their own utilities. And so in theory, food trucks are a potential way to think of a pilot to, maybe it's an easier, something that could go in more quickly, but maybe long-term it would be something different. So we were you'll see the other concepts include carts. So I think part of what we were doing in exploring this is fleshing out just the issues that you're exactly right.
I have a question about the location of the trucks and the carts. They're really tall and bulky, so it seems like it would be safer from a pedestrian perspective to move them like more centrally in the block so that cars and other people can see around them rather than like towards the corners. So I'm wondering why these are on the corners.
And I think that's a good example of something we need to look more at more carefully, like those diagrams I showed you earlier, sort of about how do we arrange them, where are they positioned, do we have to add some seating areas as well? Okay. The Block 216, Commissioner Molnar at the top here, this is sort of the way they have it. You know, they have the two parking spaces that could accommodate food carts are sort of toward the end of the block in their particular scheme. Okay. And so we're kind of building in that, but you're right, I think we need to look more at that as we land on these.
So, Mark.
Yep.
Have you, as part of this work, studied or are you planning to study the idea of what the critical mass of these need to be in order to be a vibrant and vital use?
I think that's definitely something we are talking about. I'm not sure we have the answer to that yet, but that is definitely a topic that's come up multiple times. It's like, is two enough? Is three enough? Is six enough? Is one enough? You know, and what's the right mix of all the different sort of, I think this is why Matt brought up the curation, like the sort of finding a manager, an operator, a curator of the carts to get, make sure we have the right number and then the right diversity of them is sort of going to be a critical component. But I don't know that we have an answer quite yet on that.
I will piggyback on that. I think you should really study what happened on Ankeny Park, which was a total disaster. I mean, nothing. I mean, I remember going as soon as those opened, there was nobody there. It was very empty. It didn't have the vibe. It was next to Burnside, so I'm sure that had something to do with it. But you would have thought that being so close to the park blocks, it would have been successful. It's just nobody wanted to cross the street to go there. So, and it's also, it was only four trucks.
Right.
I mean, or four carts. No, they weren't trucks, they were carts.
It wasn't within walking distance of the heart of downtown,
right,
where all the jobs are, which right. is why the Block 216 works so well.
Right.
There's a lot of jobs all the way around there.
And then I guess my other, as long as
hotels.
Yeah, my other comment is, if I'm a property owner and you put a bunch of food carts in front of my building, I don't know if I'd like that, because, I mean, we're here at the Design Commission trying to activate the buildings at the ground level, and you're telling me that you could decide to put a food cart or a bunch of food carts in front of me, which means that maybe a restaurant won't want to be, nobody will be able to see me from the street. I mean, it's all sorts of things that I think it's very, very, I mean, the target location. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, there's nothing, so you're activating the other side of the street. But it almost seems like you have to do it around parks or around plazas, right, or around things like that, rather than buildings that have viable retail ground floors and activated ground floors. And I'm not sure, just one last thing, I'm not sure how I feel about walking down a street that's got this whole thing going on both sides. So anyway, 2 cents.
I would definitely say, just to echo your point about the proximity of the food carts and trucks, which are now just in service parking lots with no buildings like directly adjacent to them, this idea of placing them in the right of way very close now to buildings where we are trying to do exactly what you described is something we're also still trying to learn about and trying to be strategic with where the best, the blank wall, the Galleria does have a lot of walls without a lot of active retail storefronts in it on this particular stretch. And so trying to be careful as you're suggesting about where those are placed. And we still have a ways to go. I wouldn't say we've totally landed on that yet, for sure. So moving on, and that was a nice segue to Ankeny Alley West, Ankeny Corridor West again, which is sort of where this was tried before and again fell apart, I think, for many different reasons. We're trying to look at this again. Like Matt and Rich talked about, we're not looking at the park per se. There are a lot more conversations we need to have with the Parks Bureau about sort of making this whole thing work. We're looking primarily at the areas around and the streets around this particular square. And again, Sam, like you were just suggesting, trying to activate the area around the park without sort of looking at the park. There's definitely opportunities and more conversations to come with the Parks Bureau about potential partnerships and synergies. But right now, what you'll see in the drawings are largely on the streets around this park. And so today, and we're looking north, just orient everyone. Here's Burnside. This is the North Park blocks continuing here to the north. This is Park coming in from the bottom. Oak Broadway is just over here. Bailey's Tap Room is right here with the kind of neat two stories or business here. Ankeny Square Apartments, the big CenturyLink Sentinel sort of structure with all the antennas is right here. We have about, this is sort of the spread of on-street parking spaces. There was, and my drawing, this is an example of how this drawing is already wrong or out of date. We won't dwell on it. There used to be a bike share sort of station right here. This big purple line used to be a bike facility. I'm not sure that's accurately represented anymore. There is a TriMet bus stop, though, right out here on Burnside. I'll just draw your attention. This is an ad lane, so you can see this is right at the location where Burnside widens from the 100-foot or so width down to the 60-foot that it used to be in the 20s when it was widened. So this lane is just appearing all of a sudden. This is a so-called ad lane right in that park block right there. So I just want to highlight. So you look at that one when we look at the next drawing, which shows you sort of we could move that function of an ad lane further down Burnside to the west and potentially do some food truck sort of allocation there. So this is a proposal that looks a little more aggressively at closing some of these streets, which again, from a transportation function, are not critical pieces of the network. So there is still a need to get to a structured parking facility, a door here, and an access point to a surface lot on the CenturyLink block. But there are opportunities to close one or more of the streets that surround sort of the park here and sort of activate them with, again, perhaps some arrangements of food carts. There are also on some of these streets that surrounded space to, and again, like that ad lane, add some food trucks to kind of create more of a nucleus, a center of more activity and more energy, perhaps building on, I think, on that idea that happened a few years ago with locating some carts, which was a good intent. Making this is a very unique and special sort of urban place we have in our downtown. Making it more active would sort of help bridge the North Park blocks to this part south of Burnside here. So yes, thank you. Also missing, Matt's highlighting another thing that's missing from my graphic. Part of the recent transportation project, Central City in Motion, highlighted a new crossing, probably a full signalized intersection right here at Park as part of that green loop alignment that would sort of drastically improve the crossing sort of experience between the park blocks at this location and help open up sort of this location to a lot of energy, traffic, and population that is north of Burnside today.
And when you say fully signalized, you mean a traffic signal, not one of the pedestrian signals.
Correct. Right now. So, and actually, I may be stepping a little ahead. They'll say crossing improvement, but the last three intersections on Burnside that don't have signals yet. If you can see 9th Avenue, Park, and 8th, all the rest of the intersections on Burnside have signals now. It's likely we would get a signalized intersection there, which would be great. Yes, I agree. For sure. So these pink things again are where I may be a little optimistic in terms of these are not all active retail storefronts. They're sort of doors. A few of them are currently look like exits, but some of them are definitely sort of the fronts of buildings. And to Sam's earlier point, we need to be careful about how we arrange these things and sort of make sure we're sort of working with our adjacent stakeholders in the location of these food carts and or trucks. And our third location that we looked at has been looked at before as part of this larger look at Ankeny and connecting between the park blocks and the river along Ankeny. This is a view, sort of here's a big pink in the background here. So we're looking at the blocks of Ankeny that are between 5th and 3rd. And these even get tighter than the 50-foot rights of way that we have on Southwest 9th Avenue. I think our curb to curb is 18, is that right?
Yes, tiny. The 30-foot right-of-way with 18-foot wide.
So we're even smaller, if that's possible, than the 50-foot on Southwest 9th Avenue. So right now there's one travel lane and on-street parking on one side. And if I orient you again, north is up. This is the very corner of Big Pink coming in here. This is the so-called car wash fountain, which right now isn't washing any cars. It's sort of right there. There's the sort of structure for Big Pink is here, gas station, Dante's. And Voodoo Donuts is at this end of 3rd right now, and that sort of already closed portion of Ankeny is sort of right here. So the blocks we're looking at are this segment of Ankeny and this one here. And so the potential is also, because Ankeny is not a heavily used transportation corridor, the potential is definitely here to close these two to motor vehicle traffic, these two blocks, and sort of immediately potentially add the space for food trucks. Now, because we're closing the streets, those could also be, in a longer term, as Matt and Rich were saying, with more infrastructure and sort of more work, that these could be open to food carts because we're closing the street and, frankly, would have more space and more flexibility to sort of arrange new structures in the right of way. I would also just identify that some of these rectangles are dark red because food carts are already arriving on sort of this surface, these private property owners in this location, these privately owned blocks, excuse me, this would be an opportunity where improvements in the right-of-way could also be augmented, at least in the near term, by food carts or other type of food-related businesses located on adjacent surface lots. There's also the possibility sort of adjacent on the backside of the gas station to sort of activate that edge as well.
Excuse me. So before we kind of open it up to further discussion, just again reminding folks of where we are, and I think you've highlighted on some of these issues, how many, what density of units do we need both to maintain affordability and to promote vibrancy and to make it attractive for someone to manage it? We've talked about the infrastructure needs and parking circulation, stakeholder outreach being critical. So what we're doing is this conversation is somewhat similar to the one we've had with the work group of daylighting all the issues to be considered. And so these are just some of this is an evaluation framework where we can sort of identify, sort of the strengths and weaknesses of different locations. And it's things like, again, this program efficiency, that's where we're getting at that density of vendors, the proximity to tourist areas and to downtown employees. I think two of these locations in particular are opportunities to activate spaces that have been identified in the past. The logistical information, like, is there access to water, electric, wastewater removal, trash recycling, bathrooms, which are required for employees. And if you offer seating, then they're also required for patrons, pest control and security, which would likely be contracted services. And then we have, evaluating the impacts to mobility. Are we going to impact the mobility of the proposed green loop or ADA accessibility, things like that? Impacts to adjacent businesses, as Commissioner Rodriguez was mentioning, being aware of the loading and parking lots, that's why Mark has those on his drawings, and on-street parking. So these are the factors that we're kind of considering. And again, we're going to assemble this up into a memo to the mayor that really identifies the opportunities and considerations for this concept. So I think with that, if there's some general thoughts on all of these, to continue the conversation.
Thanks very much. Very good presentation, guys. Do commissioners have questions they'd like to ask?
Did you ever consider the parking garage that's being redeveloped on, Park and between Morrison and Salmon, I think? A big parking structure across from the Galleria.
That frontage.
Retail has always struggled in there. It's been vacant for years and years and years. And Mother Goose is gone forever, so who's going to move in there, and why can't the food carts take some ownership of that space?
Is that one of the blocks on the 9th Avenue?
It is.
I think it extends. Yeah. It does extend that far east.
Yeah, it does.
Or sorry, that far south.
Yeah. We're not looking specifically in the parking structure itself, but definitely adjacent to it on 9th Avenue.
There's likely to be vacant space for retail for quite some time in the building itself.
Yeah, Prosper is working on kind of the marketing plan for the space, and they're kind of reshaping the spaces to be smaller spaces. I know a lot of them aren't really, the building's not really designed to handle large restaurant tenants. There are a couple restaurant spaces, but my understanding, the building can't handle multiple restaurant facilities. So.
I had some random thoughts in no particular order. I echoed what Zeri said about the critical mass. That's what makes 216. You've got so many choices when you go to that block. I'm aware of food trucks in other cities where they have a time of day restriction. They can be there for a few hours, and if they're in front of a bank or something like that, it doesn't seem like that's that big of a negative impact. I'm curious about the mobility of the cart. Somebody mentioned a truck you can drive off, a cart. Do you come and hook it up to your pickup and pull it away at night, or do you just park it there permanently? I have questions about that. Yeah. A lot of our carts, because of the parking lots, are right now oriented with vending happening out of the end, and if they become parked on the sidewalk, they'll have to get remodeled to vend out of the side windows. I guess somebody's going to have a task to do there to adapt those. I was curious in the Ankeny Square. Ankeny Square I was intrigued by because the buildings around it, the telephone facility, no, that's not going to bother them. It's not that active of a block, and maybe if critical mass could be created there. I saw seating and vending on the street and not in the park, and I was wondering if we could work with the Park Bureau to create seating for eating out of the carts in the park itself to maybe help activate the park. Ankeny East. I've always thought that the intersections of Ankeny at 4th and 3rd were needed road diet. They've always been extra wide and not very safe for pedestrians because they're not signalized, but also geometrically they're a lot of pavement. I think there's been some improvement done at Third with some of the things that grow out into the street, but anything that could be done to create a better pedestrian crossing there related to the cart, cart idea would be great.
Would you, so one of the really great things about the carts on block 216 and elsewhere is that they do such a phenomenal job of site repair. You know, they actually create a street wall that accomplishes guidelines. It's just fantastic. And certainly all three locations that you shared today have need of that to a greater or lesser extent. And it seems like the two Ankeny locations, maybe more so than 9th Avenue, which doesn't mean that 9th Avenue shouldn't be first choice or, you know, seriously considered, but the two Ankeny locations I think are really interesting because of that. But do all of the things, all of the urban elements that would then support success of carts in those locations, do they exist there? And the Ankeny East location is on the north side of a tall parking structure. And have you had any conversation with the U.S. Bank Towers building management about what it's like to police that block?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay. I bet that it would be a very interesting conversation. That block is the narrow right-of-way in between the parking structure and then the garage that, or the gas station that fronts Burnside, accomplishes absolutely none of our Central City fundamental design guidelines. If there were a guideline about public urinals, it would knock it out of the park because that street is, for all intents and purposes, a public urinal. And I suspect that, and it's the building wall of the parking structure that is the target. And so I suspect that the folks who manage the U.S. Bank Tower will have a lot to tell you about how incredibly difficult that location might be, because I can't see that part of town is becoming the 24-hour city, and Goodman's are redeveloping their Ankeny blocks in that area as well. And you know, they have a vision for more Pine Street Market in the ground floor of the building that's under construction right now at Third and Ash. And it is changing dramatically, and the carts would, I'm sure, kind of slot into the character of this new, refreshed neighborhood really, really well. But they are still going to be at the perimeter, and they're still going to be in this location adjacent to a really difficult ground floor at this parking garage. And it seems like that needs a lot of consideration because it would be crushing if the carts failed. Or trucks, or whatever they happen to be. You know, and they need to be set up for success, for good urban design success. And I'm just not sure that location is going to do it for them.
So to piggyback on that, when you have locations like that have more than three or four carts and trucks, I think you should consider locating Portland Loo. That area, because not only would benefit the people who, the patrons, but also the surrounding, the businesses, in this case, the U.S. Bank and this parking. The other thing I hope that you would pay attention to, especially since these are going to be in the right of way and they are going to be sort of horizontal rather than perpendicular, is that there should be a minimum standard in terms of what these trucks and carts are made of. They don't have to be fancy, but they need to have minimum requirements. I was a few years back, I was in Sevilla, Spain, and they had used this giant plaza, just covered them with carts, and both for crafts as well as food, and they all, it seemed like they had a certain standards that, you know, the thing that opened,
became also a shelter for rain and for sun. And then there was some enclosure in the back that covered a lot of the mess. So I know that by creating this situation, you give some assurance to these cart owners that there is a sense of duration, permanency. Mm-hmm. And in exchange for that, then you should ask that they make an investment, that they do have a certain minimum material and quality of their vehicles or whatever.
And I think the just on that too, we did look at the Mercado on 72nd and Foster, and also the three carts that are on Pioneer Courthouse Square that are
right
to a higher spec. I think we need to wrestle with sort of the cost of that, but I think we've talked a lot, Commissioner Sender, about the quality of these carts and these structures that would be out in the right of way again, but also just the adjacent businesses and what are they, right. What's the experience there?
I'll just add a couple of things. One is, I think there's going to be a battle between getting that appropriate massing to attract people and not having a gauntlet of trucks along a sidewalk. I mean, you know, you're walking in a tunnel then, and that could be problematic. I know that they cost more, but I really would. I think you're right, Brian. The way it went in Portland is because what was made available, which were full parking blocks, but the fact that they can move them, I think it's one gives them opportunity to relocate if that location is not. Relocate easier if that location doesn't work, and to clear out the city a little bit and mm-hmm. security issues. I mean, I'm not sure if I want to walk in the middle of the night along a street that's got a bunch of carts on one side and anybody could be hiding between them.
Mm. Especially if the retail frontage, if the commercial ground floor is a blank wall.
That's what I'm saying.
It's really
all
problematic.
Of a sudden you've got a gauntlet with little spacing mm-hmm. between them. And I don't know. I just think there's some safety issues. That's why the mobility might actually be a good thing, mm-hmm. even though in the short term it'll cost more money for the truck owners. But I think we need to think about that side too. I mean, it just seems like we're going to create these tunnels of carts on both sides. There's something about a full open street that makes you feel comfortable walking even at 11, 10, 12. 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever.
That's my biggest concern too. I agree with Julie that right now the carts do a great job of meeting guidelines by creating an active street front. That's usually because they're in empty parking lots and they create that other facade that retail really needs to ping pong from. But once you add that other wall in the middle of the street, that cart will have one side that it faces, but then you're going to have the back side of
The back side.
Creating a tunnel down the middle of the road, which creates really safety, visibility issues, especially for pedestrians who, in Portland, a lot of us cross mid-block or...
with our phones in our hands, you know, I mean,
people aren't paying attention.
Yep.
It just sets up some safety concerns.
I want to add, just in response to that, is that I hope that you do not hold these parking spaces sacred, in that I agree that you can't have a wall of trucks side by side, but in between or every three or four, create little parklets in between mm-hmm. that you have done that creates those breaks and gives mm-hmm. more ideas about people congregating, sitting there, and give more visibility to retail as well. So that's something that maybe you should put in the equation.
I'm a little concerned that you're looking at peripheral locations, and one of the reasons 216 works so well is that it's in the heart of downtown. It's a vital part of the city. And the carts are off the main sidewalk, so you can use the main sidewalks. They're part of the fabric of the city in off hours. When you move them way down to Burnside, there really isn't much going on down there. I mean, which is one of the good things, I guess, because there's room for them. But on mm-hmm. the other hand, how are they going to succeed in an environment like that? I don't know if there's that's why I like the parking garage, because it's, again, part of the central city, and it isn't going on the street. It's going into what is a parking lot area, which is sort of a wasteland anyway. So be careful of being too peripheral with these things and hoping that they're going to succeed mm-hmm. by some magic.
So just a few more minutes here. Do commissioners, other commissioners have comments they want to toss out as a wrap-up? Anybody who has more to put in?
One more on piggybacking on Don's. When the carts first appeared in town, I always thought that somebody would take one of our parking lots and do something like the Mercado and create a kind of a permanent, kind of a covered structure that the carts would plug into as a module, and it would always be there, almost like the food markets in Spain or something like that. Yeah. And
Singapore does that really well.
So you dedicate a space, so you have that critical mass, but
and I think that could be a longer term. I mean, again, that's also, I think, part of the discussion and part of these, you know, we're testing some ideas now, trying to find the right locations. We're trying to find the locations that maybe are less in demand for transportation, less in demand for parking, at least in the near term. And then maybe testing some ideas, potentially ending up at some idea, like a more permanent structure and sort of having a facility that is a known established food cart, sort of literally pod. So I think we could be heading there. But again, we're just
getting
going.
The problem you're going to find is that the value of a block in downtown will not justify the economics.
Right. So. Yeah,
well, we're running out of empty blocks downtown.
Yep. Well, and there's some remnants. The neat thing about Ankeny, there are some remnant parcels. Like there are some smaller pieces that may not be very developable at all, although, yes.
Well, there's one up by the Art Museum, for example. It's a parking block, a half block up there. It's on the South Park blocks.
Right. I was thinking more of even smaller pieces, remnant pieces. Around Ankeny and Burnside, the streets wiggle a little bit, and there are some leftover pieces that could. But, yes, there are other ones around as well.
Are there questions that you have for us that we have not answered? Yeah, sorry about that.
It was very helpful.
Risk,
thank you.
It's always a risk. Thank you very much. This is a great briefing. It's
thank
a fascinating
so much.
Topic. And Rich, the annual report's really nice. Thank you for sharing it.
Thank you, commissioners. We'll probably come back again.
Yeah, please do.
When the concepts are more developed. And then if anything were to be considered a non-standard improvement in the right-of-way, you'd also have, or staff may have, I should say, design review obligations to approve non-standard improvements. So I don't know if that would necessarily come to you, but
okay,
that's kind of the legal nexus of all this in Title 33.
Okay.
So right now you're just in an advisory role, but there may be some legal requirements too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks very much. So we're going to take a 5-minute break.